nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical.
Not the vertical.
We can roll the image. Make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur. Or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Ethanolive Internet Radio, www.ethanolive.com.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome. It is Sunday night here in Chicago, Illinois at 8 p.m. Today is Sunday, September 16th, 2012. I'm Al Waterloo, and you're listening to Simple Flight Radio. Thanks for listening tonight. With us is normally Mr. Mark Eppner, but tonight, unfortunately, he cannot be here. And in his place, we have Mr. Jim Stone. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, Al. I was really surprised to use the word normally and Mark Eppner in the same sentence.
It's amazing that they can actually fit together in a sentence.
But he snuck out, so we can talk about him tonight. Okay?
Absolutely. Well, this is going to be a great show. We're glad you're here. Thanks for filling in. And so we're looking forward to it.
Oh, after tonight, he'll be glad to show up each and every night he's scheduled.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is great. We are live from the Kilo, Papa Whiskey Kilo Airport tonight. If you don't know where that is, pull out your JEP chart and look it up. Or you could pull out your iPad, look it up on 4Flight, and you'll see where we're broadcasting live from. Signature flight service FBO here at the Chicago Executive Airport allows us to broadcast from their terminal building here. It's a great place. It's a fun place to get some gas. Right now they just popped some fresh popcorn out there, so it smells really good here.
It does. First thing that you get a whiff of when you walk into this place is popcorn.
That's actually kind of neat because on the ramp you smell jet fuel, and then you come inside, it's popcorn, too.
Resistance is futile.
Absolutely. Well, this is great. So, anyway, we've got a great show in store for us this evening. And
I love that air of confidence. Let's see if we can live up to it.
Oh, I think we will. We always do every night or every Sunday night.
Well, unless you drop your 3x5 cards, then we're...
Exactly. Well, maybe if we're playing War or Go Fish, it might turn out something different. But we're talking about airplanes tonight, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But normally, so Jim, a little background here. Mark gets a great laugh out of me every single week. And I try to make him laugh, and I've tried everything. I'm running out of ammo.
Yeah, if you're going to try and get me to make you laugh, I just have to point out how, you know, looks have to count for something. So.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
I'm glad to be on radio.
Yeah, well, you've got a face for radio, Jim.
I do.
A face for radio.
I've
got to give it
smiling for the microphone.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but now, normally, Mark starts us off with a joke. And even though Mark...
That's
What's that?
I've listened to the show.
Yeah. Well, good. Thank you. You're like a very loyal listener. We should get you on a frequent flyer program or something. I don't know if they have something like that for radio shows, but that'd be thank you for listening.
Yes, I was the one.
Good. Well, anyway, in spirit, in normal Mark Eppner spirit, we cannot let him not get away from us.
So you've got him in a can?
We have him in a can. He went ahead and decided to make sure that we had our Sunday night chuckle tonight. So we have a great joke in store for you. Mr. Mark Eppner, take it away.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Mark Eppner, and Al asked me to lead off the show tonight with a little bit of aviation humor. And I apologize I can't be with you live, but we are pre-recording this segment so that we don't have to leave it in Al's hands. And I'll just leave that comment alone and move on. So I'm reminded of a flight which was a small twin-engine turbine airplane with a pilot and co-pilot crew. And as they turn to final approach, the co-pilot all of a sudden calls out, "Captain, this runway looks extremely short." And his eyes just got big as saucers and said, "You know, you're right. This is a very short runway. We've got to do a short field approach and landing." And so the captain called out 10 degrees of flaps, 25 degrees of flaps, 40 degrees of flaps, pulling the throttle back, because the closer and closer they got to the runway, the shorter and shorter it appeared. And it's just before they touched down, the throttles were pulled all the way back, went into reverse, slammed on the brakes, tearing the tires to shreds, and the plane came to rest just before the end of the runway. And the captain called out and said, "Oh my goodness, that was a short runway." And the co-pilot, looking from side to side, said, "Yeah, but look how wide it is." Back to you, Al.
Okay. Mark delivers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I fly a King Air.
Which is a small twin-engine turbo, just like was described here. It's not that small compared to many of the planes out there, but
no.
It would suffice for Mark's joke.
Absolutely.
He didn't say he knew the pilots.
Yeah, maybe it was me and our coworker, so Mr. Travis Ammon. And So we fly out to Philadelphia almost on a very regular basis.
As in probably tomorrow.
Can you believe it? So we fly out to Philadelphia, and we land at one of those types of airports, and we look at each other after we land, and we just go, "Whew, man, that was a that gets your blood going every single time." But hopefully we never have to actually say that, "Wow, look at that. That was a short runway, but man, look at how wide it is."
So you're not going into the main Philly airport out there?
No, we're not. We're going to one of the satellite airports in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. K Delta Yankee Lima.
So after you land and you get into whatever transportation is afforded to you, you don't have that much traffic to deal with, I wouldn't imagine.
No, not at all. It's a neat place to fly into. It's a great place to fly a King Air.
But I bring that up for a reason.
Yeah.
General aviation has its advantages.
Absolutely. You got that right. It's point to point, get there quick, hop in as soon as the doors open, your car is 15 steps away and you're gone.
Love it.
I absolutely love it.
Never have to take your shoes off.
Yeah. And you never have to take your shoes off. You could bring, can you believe it? You could bring a whole bottle of water on board, too.
Water?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That H2O, one of those things. But anyway, well, that's a thank you, Mark, for sharing that joke. That was a good one. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Don't have any more from him?
We don't have anything more from him.
He only had one?
He only had one. Did you come prepared?
Well, I was kind of hoping he'd hold up a little better than that. Okay. I should have checked both fuel tanks before.
Well, good. Well, that's an aviation lesson learned. So, but anyway, there's a what's interesting is that this week in aviation, a lot of stuff happened for me and you and us together.
This week.
This very week. This very week.
The one that just ended.
The one that just ended.
Last night.
Yes, midnight last night, or 11:59, if you want to be, if we should be precise. But,
yes.
So, what, you have some exciting news, that stuff that happened to you this week in aviation. What happened?
I went flying with this real weird instructor who put me through some very interesting experiences, and that's what I asked him to do. That's what I pay him to do. I try to pay him. And it's okay. So what did I do? My first landing at Oshkosh.
All right, that's awesome.
Yep.
That's it. Was that on your aviation bucket list?
That, you know, my bucket list used to be so many pages long, and the aviation bucket list is something I didn't even get to until about 2 years ago. And, yes, it was certainly into that bucket list, and it's scratched off, but that page still remains. There's some other things on it. But, no, it was an excellent week. I mean, that was on Thursday, and if anybody looked at weather radar for Thursday and looking at Wisconsin and Illinois, you saw this gigantic cold front coming through. And it just so happens that my flying instructor for that was this guy. Probably some of you out there in the audience have heard of him, Alex Waterloo.
Hey, that's me.
Oh, yeah.
Holy
cow.
Come
to think of it, yes.
What a guy.
Yeah. So it took us a while to get off the ground because we kept looking at the weather thinking, are we going to do this or not? And another reason for that is because I'm pretty early in this aviation bucket list game. It was my second dual cross country.
Yeah.
And we took off from right here at Papa Whiskey Kilo, Chicago Executive, and we skirted underneath the clouds and went through the rain and looked at what the ground looks like from about 500 feet for a little bit, and then got up to where the clouds were lifting some, and gradually we broke into the clear, got to Oshkosh, went into town and had a great hamburger. General aviation, by the way, folks, is marvelous. When you go land at an airport and they come out there anxiously wanting to top off your plane, and we were pretty anxious to go ahead and take them up on it because their fuel prices were considerably lower than our departure point.
Way lower.
And we were waiting for the traffic to, not the traffic, but the weather to clear out, so we had delayed a little bit, and so after Chicago.
And all that, it's actually a pretty neat a photo that we're going to post to Twitter right now. You can find it hashtag SimpleFlight on Twitter, and it was probably some of the most cool orange, red. I want to even say a little purple in there.
Just awesomeness. Color doesn't really describe it.
But yeah,
it was as far as you could see to the left and as far as you could see to the right.
Yeah,
and down underneath it, in front of us, it was kind of dark.
Right.
And rainy.
Dark and rainy.
And that's what was in store for us.
That was perfect.
But still VFR.
Absolutely. I thought that was such a great flight because we had a we got up high. We gave you some different experiences while flying around higher altitudes, lower altitudes, night. Got you probably one of the coolest.
Let me point out, this was an instructional flight.
It was.
So this is really the purpose of higher education.
Yeah, absolutely. To see a higher level of color.
There we go.
Absolutely. Well, that was a good time. So, there was to expand on what we did for this week in aviation. That's a really awesome thing that you did.
It really focused on weather awareness. It was just going to be a nice cross-country thing with a lot of VOR effort and some pilotage, good navigation. Can you get yourself lost? Yes, you can. I proved it. Pretty scary thought. I didn't know I was lost until I found out I was lost, and then I realized I'd been lost for some time. It hurts to admit it at the time. Right now, I realize I'm safely back on Earth.
Right.
But a lot of the preparation that went into the day had to do with weather. And so,
yeah,
you know, I get to thinking about how much time we spend listening to weather reports or ATIS reports, and these all sound kind of dreary, especially if you get one of those robo reports.
Right. Well, you know what? So, if I were to choose a weather report, and I start to think of skies, that to replicate skies that we saw on our flight from La Crosse back to Palwaukee.
Oh, and texture.
And texture. There's only one area that I can think that can replicate the sky that we saw, and that's along the Front Range Mountains of the Rocky Mountain Range.
Over by the Air Force Academy.
The Air Force Academy, you got it.
Estes
Park. How about Colorado Springs? Let's see what they've got going on this evening. They've got some of the most magnificent skies out there.
Altimeter 3011. Visual Pro, Troy 35 left, 35 right, 31 in use. Notice airmen, warning, runway 31 has been shortened. 6,900 feet available. X-ray Mike closed between runway 31 and Golf. X-ray Foxtrot closed between Bravo and Mike. Advise on our contact. We have information, Sierra. Fox brings in report information, Sierra. 0054 is Zulu. Wind, 040 at 6. Visibility, greater than 0. View clouds at 12,000. Temperature 23. Check density altitude.
That's pretty good weather.
Wow,
let's go flying.
That's not bad.
6 knots at 040?
Yeah, absolutely. 6 knots, few clouds. The sun might be just setting up right
now. But a couple
now.
Of months ago, their forecasts were a little different than that.
They definitely were.
Smoke, obscuration,
yeah.
Thermals caused by forest fires.
Absolutely. You had air mets, mountain obscuration by smoke. Absolutely. I think that I'm glad all that stuff's over out there. And can I tell a story about Colorado Springs real quick?
Do you have one?
Believe it or not, I do.
Is it okay for general audiences?
Yes.
Okay.
So we flew into Colorado Springs this summer, and by the way, I want to tell you, or I want to vote Colorado Springs as the rainbowest. That's not a word. I just came up with it. City in the country.
Oh,
and
have you ever been to Hawaii?
I have not.
I just have to challenge you on that.
I have not.
Okay,
but
the continental country.
Yeah, the 48
contiguous
states. Thank you.
I've got you rattled. Ha ha ha.
It's pretty easy to do. In the summer, there are tons and tons of rainbows there. They're just by some awesome storms that you get in the weather patterns created by
when
front
they fall
range
over the mountains?
Yeah.
Oh.
You get some amazing lighting, some storms, some heavy-duty storms, and it just produces some pretty awesome.
If they make it over the mountains, they are awesome.
They are. They're heavy duty storms.
Well, the mountains tend to dry out most of the air before it gets over that. But if the currents are strong enough, then the atmosphere can carry the moisture.
Yeah.
It's going to be a doozy.
Right. Absolutely. Well, that's my spiel on Colorado Springs. It's a rainbowest city. And we can, maybe we should ask Webster Dictionary if we can add that to the rainbow, or add that to the dictionary.
How was that again? Rainbow SD?
How would you say it? Rainbow
A very strong proclivity for rainbows?
Yeah.
We can find each one of those words in the dictionary, but I'd have to read the definition to make sure I was using them correctly.
Absolutely. Well, we can use your words, or we can challenge the dictionary and make up our own. So either way, it's a great spot. Very good. But anyway, you're listening to Thano Live Internet Radio, Simple Flight Radio Show. Jim Stone is with here tonight. I'm Al Waterloo, and kind of getting into the meat and potatoes of everything that we've got going on tonight. We have a really neat topic, and we sat down this week, and me and you, Jim,
yep.
got
We spent a lot of time this week, and then
we did.
That wasn't enough. You had to go flying away for the next 3 days and have even more fun.
Yeah. Well, we're back on the radio live. So, just think about we're being transmitted through the air right now, or Cat5 cables.
There we go. Yeah. Fiber optic.
Absolutely.
I like going through fiber optic cables.
Good. Excellent. But so tonight's theme is something that's a little very near and dear to your heart, isn't it?
It is. It's a problem. It tears at some of my memories. And if anybody took a look at, I'm sure Al's going to put another picture of me out there on Facebook, probably put my name with it, and you'll find out that I am definitely old enough to remember the 60s, even though I can't. And this gives me some concern about aviation. The day, something usually after Johnny Carson or something like that.
Yeah.
What do you think they do when they sign off? You think they just flip the switch and say, good night, everybody?
But, that's usually what my mom did when I went to bed. And she probably did say everybody, because I probably had five imaginary friends, too.
Well, actually, there was a process that the stations would go through. They'd give a little quick news roundup. They would show their station logo. They might give you another couple of minutes to tune in the TV really good, so that when you turned it on the next day, it would be right on the station.
I mean, perfect.
Because you probably only got that one station.
Yeah.
You know, and if you were lucky, if you lived in an urban area and you had rabbit ears, but for us, it was the antenna up on the chimney, if you will.
You mean you didn't have, like, 500 TV channels back then?
Oh, my. It reminds me of the commercial that, you know, we had to have our TV right next to the outlet on the wall. You know that.
Yeah.
You kids have it so easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were lucky to get. When I first got TV, I was living in southern West Virginia, and that's such a place that you have to actually pipe in sunshine if you want that. So imagine how hard it is to get TV.
Wow.
Anyway, back to the sign-off thing that they would go through. One of the most glorious things was, they would show this Air Force footage of an F-105. Just imagine a jet, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome, streamlined little puppy that's they've spent jillions of dollars getting these movies of. And I can say movies because it was shot on film back in those days.
Yeah.
Of this F-105 soaring through clouds. I mean, When I'm taking my VFR lessons right now, you know, you got your 1,000 feet, 500 feet, 2,000 feet, or,
right,
you know, 3 miles visibility.
Right.
No, here's this guy going right through the clouds. That's exhilaration and power.
Yeah.
And they would have this, I think it was America the Beautiful playing in the background.
Very nice.
And they'd recite this poem that was called High Flight.
Very nice.
Can I give it to you?
Yeah, please.
All
Let's
right.
Hear it.
This is one of the things. I want you to stop and think of how enthusiasm for aviation was playing a role back in the 60s when a TV station would sign off with this being played. Picture that F-105 zooming through the clouds, America the Beautiful playing in the background, and a voice comes on and says, "Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have not dreamed of, wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I've chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Up, up the long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace, where never lark or even eagle flew. And while with silent, lifting mind, I've trod the high, untressed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God.
Whoa.
And that's an interesting thing, to think that that was accepted, to allow a pilot to sound off like that and put himself out there on an equal basis to reach out and touch the face of God. I think today you'd have a few people clamoring of,
holy
just,
cow.
You know, to put it in today's language, who the hell does he think he is?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Seriously. That's a bold statement.
And the sound of the person who was doing that, you know, was very mature. But here I was, a kid, and I'm picking up on all of this, and it's such a, what do we have for leadership telling us to do that stuff today? So I looked up who wrote the poem.
Yeah, what did you find?
It's going to blow your mind.
Holy cow.
That poem wasn't written in the 50s or the 60s.
Really?
That poem,
but that's
was,
like the Jet era, though.
That's the Jet era.
Yeah, that's
where
the
else are you going
it?
To get that? Dance the skies on laughter-silvered wings.
Silver wings.
Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sunsplit clouds. Talk about going up there where never lark or even eagle flew.
Wow.
Going so high that you reach out and touch the face of God. Well, that poem was written by a 19-year-old.
Wow. Are you serious? 19?
19, but don't think of him as just a kid, okay?
Okay.
Imagine what this 19-year-old had done that gave him the brass to write this.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, to put it in perspective, just imagine the exhilaration of a young pilot in 1941.
Wow. World War II?
Well, not quite, but kind of.
Kind of, sort of.
On his seventh flight in a Spitfire.
Oh, man.
Nice little British airplane.
Yeah.
Cute thing with a lot of power.
Yeah.
He flew up to 33,000 feet.
Oh, man.
And when he came back down, he wrote that poem. I guess he was pumped.
Yeah.
Okay?
Oh, yeah.
And it still stands today as really an awesome thing of what does it mean to fly? I don't
sure.
think there's a pilot out there who hasn't had some kind of experience that he can't tie into that
right.
in some way.
Absolutely. Well, can we take that last line of that poem?
Mm-hmm. Put out my hand and touch the face of God.
Right. And so it's funny that you mentioned that, or well, that's the closing line of that poem. And I put that picture that we talked about that I just posted on Twitter. Earlier in the week, I put it on Facebook. I just thought that was unbelievably beautiful. And I had a friend that commented on that photo. And you know what the comment said? I'll take that as a no.
I haven't been following your Facebook page
wow.
today.
you're half, you know, half of it's you. Yeah, no, but the comment read, "God rocks."
God rocks. Yeah,
and it's kind of cool. Not that this is a religious thing, but so the neat thing is that there's enthusiasm for me to share flying experiences with people on the ground. I take pictures and I post them on Facebook and say, when I'm gone, this is what I'm doing. And people still think that, you know, at least one of my friends thought, hey, God rocks. That's a cool picture. You know, only somebody greater can create that, and a pilot can go really see that and be, you know, get intimate with it.
It really is. It's the essence of the exhilaration. The awe.
Yeah.
I mean, there's. Let's face it. We're at 9,500 feet. We've got the autopilot on.
Right.
And quite frankly, you don't want to have your feet on the rudders when your knees are shaking like that. You look at this thing and you're going like, "Oh my gosh!"
Yeah.
I remember. You were getting out your iPhone camera and taking pictures of this, and I'm wishing I had my a better camera along, you know, to get some high resolution shots.
Right.
And we were both giddy, and I turned to you and I said, you know, flying sucks.
I do remember that.
How could you possibly not get excited? It was just, and we could look back and see the most awesome sunset too.
Right.
This was just what was all around us, was
right,
this cloud that was being lit up.
Exactly.
But we could look back and see the sun just going over the horizon.
It was probably one of the nicest views I had seen in an airplane in a long time. And there's something to be said about that. There's just something really, really, really special about that. And it's kind of neat that this poem kind of captures that. Let's say you take go back to the line where it's that he talks about eagles and larks.
Yeah, I kind of like the way that's thrown in there.
Yeah.
He says, I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace where never lark or even eagle flew. Now, in 1941, a lot of people knew what the different types of birds were.
Right.
And a lark is just a little flighty thing that stays close to the ground.
Yeah.
An eagle is a mighty, powerful thing that soars.
Right.
So, never lark or even eagle flew.
That's unbelievable. It's kind of it's breaking the barrier of altitude.
It's breaking the barrier of things that you know and are comfortable with.
Right.
It's going beyond.
Right, absolutely. And there's that, that's kind of that I think we just cracked open one of the nuts here of enthusiasm, is going beyond what you know. That really brings in some level of enthusiasm. That's bungee jumpers, right? Mm-hmm. They don't know what's going to happen when they get to the bottom. The cord could snap. They could get a great view. They can come back up.
Let me put that just a little bit closer to something that, from where we were looking at that cloud, and say what happened about an hour later. You know, here we are at 9,500 feet, and I'm realizing we're getting ready to fly into something that's not VFR, so we
right.
need to lose some altitude.
Absolutely.
And at that point, we knew that the weather back home at Chicago Executive was not so good, and we were hoping that while we were flying, it would be blowing through.
Right.
So with the airplane we fly, we just checked with the satellite and said, so what's the weather back home? And they said, IFR.
Yep.
Don't
sure
go where are you going, you know?
Yeah.
So it was one of those... let's get our senses together and understand what's going on. And my friendly instructor said to me, okay, you're the pilot. What do you do?
Yeah.
I says, well, I'm not IFR rated, so we're going to put this puppy down somewhere, and we've got our choices. We can either wait it out.
Right.
Or we can wait it out.
Absolutely. There's only... Let's see.
And you said, where are you going to land? And at that point, so we're coming back from La Crosse towards Chicago, and the weather is in between us. With a glass cockpit, it's nice to look out there and see on the chart what NexRad can give you as far as information's on all of your air mats. And,
right.
Here's pretty much the area where you can't fly. Okay, well, something north of that. And I said, Janesville.
You sure did.
And from where we were, you could pretty much turn off the engine and coast to Janesville.
Absolutely.
Because we were 2 miles high, and we had about 20 miles to go.
Absolutely.
So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I thought it did. You did a really nice job with that. And what, hopefully that generated some enthusiasm in
but
you.
But it's the bungee jumper.
Right.
We were up there on the bridge.
Yep.
And we took a jump.
Yep.
It was exciting.
It was.
And then what happens? So, yeah. So I'm in territory where I've never seen the ground before, and it's night.
Right.
And it's raining.
Absolutely.
It's still VFR, but here we go. There's just a little bit of obscuration. We had decent ceilings. We had probably something like 10 or 15 miles visibility.
Right.
But you could hear the rain hitting the windshield, and it was getting interesting, and... My instructor, who at this point is insisting on just being a passenger, lets me listen to ATIS and get everything all ready for the landing, contact the tower, let them know where we are and make the approach, bring it around and make the landing.
Yeah.
Haven't made that many night landings, haven't made too many of them with wet runways that reflect runways. The lights a little differently. A little bit of wind. And we're here safe.
Yeah.
But it was a bungee jump. it wasn't that we, you know, it was a, I thought it was a fairly good landing. Of course, I can't remember any of that. You know, for about 3 minutes, I have total amnesia about the whole thing.
Was that the endorphin high, or was that the 60s coming back?
No, I think it's, you know, you could reach out and touch the face of God, or you can be, you know, just having the fear of the Lord for a moment there.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. Absolutely. So that was kind of, that's a good way of putting it. So there's a level of enthusiasm, whether it's going to see.
You know, I'm going to keep bringing religion into this. You know, I wish you, you know, happy Rosh Hashanah here too.
It's happy, you know, happy Rosh Hashanah. Today is Rosh Hashanah, which is great. But anyway, that's we digress. But anyway, so let's bring this back to the enthusiasm of, okay, there's enthusiasm of seeing something really, really neat, such as that sky, right?
I don't care how much Xbox you play, you're never going to have that thrill.
No, you won't. You absolutely won't, because it's an environment that, unless I guess you lived on top of Pike's Peak or whatnot, at that altitude, but it's a 360 degree view. All five senses are maxed out to the T, and it's something that you cannot experience. There's a ton of, it's a total rush, which is an enthusiasm.
Athletes running a marathon might have some kind of a high like that.
Yeah.
It really is a high.
It is.
When it hits you all at once like that and the grandeur of it. So I guess that's where the enthusiasm comes in, and I say, we're facing a pilot shortage in this country?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why? When we've got this kind of an attraction up there in the sky, if you want to go find it.
Right.
Who wouldn't want to go find that?
I don't know, but there's a lot of people, and there's a lot of hurdles being presented to get people to expose people to something like that. Now, think about this. If I'm going to relate back to the author of the poem, do you remember what his name was?
I do. I've got it all written down here, actually, because I didn't memorize that poem. I was reading it. His name was John Gillespie McGee Jr., and there's something else I didn't mention.
What's that?
He joined the Royal Canadian Air Force in 1940, and he was flying over in England. Actually, he was born in China to some Episcopal or Anglican Church missionaries, but his mother was British. His father was an American born in Pittsburgh.
Nice.
He joined the Royal Canadian Air Force in 1940. He died in a mid-air collision on the 13th of December, 1941. 13th of December, just a few months after he wrote this poem, he was killed in a collision.
Oh, man.
It was on a kind of a cloudy day, and it happened just under the cloud base.
Ugh.
There was a nice write-up about it. But that day that he died, think about that. That was, less than a week after Pearl Harbor. So right. World War II really hadn't gotten into such a big thing as far as Americans were concerned, and he's 19 years old and
right.
got, you know, was flying for the British.
Yeah, right. Yeah, flying for the British in probably one of the, is now regarded as one of the sexiest airplanes on the face of the planet.
What a distinctive wing shape.
Distinctive wing shape, sound of an engine and all that. Real fighter, but so one thing that's kind of that sticks out to me, and if I look back at myself as a 19-year-old, what did I have? What was my Spitfire? Well, I was driving around my grandmother's 1996 Oldsmobile Sierra with handicap plates, and here's a 19-year-old flying a Spitfire. Mm-hmm. We both had our pilot's license, but there's a pretty big difference, right?
Well, today I'd say, could you compare a 19-year-old and say, put him in a NASCAR race?
You certainly could. Well, you could.
Well, do you think a 19-year-old would be racing in NASCAR? I mean, here's a guy that had the power of a Spitfire fighter, prop-driven, in 1941, but an awesome piece of equipment, and he took it to 33,000 feet. Now, 33,000 feet, that's challenging for an airliner today.
It sure is.
That's a single-engine prop.
Unbelievable. That's an awesome, you being an engineer, that's a pretty awesome engineering feat behind all that. But
it is with prop planes, you notice the difference in altitude. If the engine is normally aspirated, meaning it's not a turbo driven engine, you're going to have a lot of trouble over about 15,000 feet.
Right, absolutely. So, those are good points. But here, if this guy's 19 years old, how does he get an experience like that, come back onto Earth and write something like that? You know, there's not many 19-year-olds in aviation today that can really have that experience. Wait a minute.
How many 19-year-olds are there that can write that well?
True.
This guy, first of all, he wrote a lot of poetry.
Right.
He was a good writer.
Yeah.
That was his first love.
Writing?
Flying came along second.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and probably the reason why flying came along second is because of wartime.
I think so, yes.
Yeah.
With his mother being British and the threat to World War II, we don't often think about that here because in the United States there was the war in Europe,
right,
which some families are very familiar with, and there was the South Pacific Theater, which some of our families are very familiar with.
Right.
But a lot of families don't realize that both of those wars went on at the same time, and the United States was spread all around the world with its logistics of fighting wars.
Right. Yeah. Now, I think you're correct about that. But from an aviation standpoint, for better or for worse, wartime was kind of the medium which gave him the aviation experience to feel this in a Spitfire and come back and write this poem.
I think, so. Yeah. And I think I see where you're going here with this. Let me take another tack on it.
Sure.
We look at the emotional state of the Wright brothers.
Yes.
And when they were flying, their whole thing, you can't do that.
Right.
Only birds can fly.
Exactly.
So they had a challenge that they were facing.
That was their bungee jump.
And then, they ended up coming up with airplanes that were used instead of blimps and, hot air balloons and things in World War II and World War I, the Great War.
Yeah, right.
And there were a lot of pilots.
Yeah.
A lot of French pilots, British pilots, German pilots.
Right.
That Snoopy.
Yeah.
In case somebody thought I was getting serious there for a minute. But
yeah,
you really did, though. You had the Red Baron. And there was a movie called The Great Waldo Pepper, who is, I think, imaginary, but it comes from that era. There were a number of World War I pilots who became barnstormers, who started air shows.
Nice.
And the idea there was the enthusiasm was spread to people who were farmers. You can do something here. You could into an airplane, and you could go see this earth that you're toiling over, that you're planting seeds in.
Right.
You can see it from the air. You can zoom over it. You can go faster than any horse you ever imagined. You can faster and higher than the birds. Well, so now you start thinking about the lark and the eagle.
Right.
Okay. So now you get up to where this gentleman, Mr. McGee, at the age of 19, is getting ready to fly and defend England.
Defend the very soil that barnstormers are flying over, and it's a little bit of higher elevation.
It's a little bit of higher everything. We've kicked the can way down the road and up in the air with this one, because I was talking earlier about how much power and what a feat it was to get up to 33,000 feet.
Right.
And that's what really World War II did, was started the age of air power.
Yes. And it sure did.
And that kept going. That kept going with Korea and the jet fighters. It kept going with all of the test fighter, test pilots, the Chuck Yeagers of the world.
Exactly. The F-105 when the TV stations would flip the switch.
Right. And there were people that would get all thrilled about that, and they didn't even know about what was going on with the X-1. rocket flight, you know?
Yeah, right.
So all of that stuff was providing constant enthusiasm. And we had our aces in Korea, all the way up through that, in Vietnam, air wars.
Absolutely.
The B-52 carpet bombing campaigns.
Yep.
Get after that. And I think today's awesome things, I mean, we've had the Tomcat, the F-16, F-18, when they go to air shows and they put on a terrific show. But there's a number of things that started happening recently.
What's that?
The Bone. You know what the Bone is?
Is that the B-1 bomber?
The B-1.
The Lance?
When you say B-1, it's B-O-N-E, Bone. So
yeah,
that's
right.
That's the, okay. How many of those are flying?
There's only a handful of them.
Well, that's because drones do the work that those guys do.
Right.
And a B-2. We spent all of that money to make it invisible.
Right.
And the stealth fighter. You don't hear much about these things anymore.
No,
right now.
Well, if you do hear about them, it's negative connotation about them. It's nothing.
Yes.
It's not. It's how much money they cost to build, or how what they're what, or an accident. So you don't hear this element of, you know, the TV stations don't turn off the lights or say goodnight to everybody anymore, right?
Right.
But
showing a Raptor going through some of the awesome turns that it's capable of doing.
Exactly. So you don't see this anymore. The way that you hear about these things is what, you know, if it for some reason it crashes, who it killed, and you know, how much it costs, and then the government investigation of, does this plane really need to exist?
Or a drone attack that goes in and surgically knocks out one of the leaders of Al-Qaeda, and accidentally there are two other people that are just collateral damage.
Right.
It's the cost of the mission. Well, compare that with some of the bombing that was done in Europe in World War II.
Right.
These things are so much more clean, and the war, you know, communications does a lot to bring it into our living room and to bring out opinions.
Absolutely.
So everybody that wants to talk about it, and you're right, it gets a negative connotation.
Yeah.
And none of those drone fighters come out of their air-conditioned offices.
Yeah.
to walk and strut down the street and say, I'm a drone pilot.
Yeah, exactly. I know that when we go out and after our cross countries, we get out of the plane, we go have dinner, and it's, hey, we're pilots. It's awesome. You know, there's that swagger, you know, be it a good thing or a bad thing.
I feel it.
Yeah, so do I. And I think that's just a high from a high from the trip, or, you know, and being a pilot and seeing all these different things, the flight into the unknown and the flight to see the beautiful sky and everything.
I think we have to turn around from some of the negative images that we have, and there's a lot of really good imagery in it. That picture that you posted on Facebook is certainly good imagery.
Yeah.
To be a pilot, to go out and see that. But how about the good things that can be done with a FedEx pilot or the corporate pilot who isn't taking a CEO to Washington to ask for more tax favors,
right?
But rather is flying parts from one factory to another to keep 1,000 workers working on an assembly line somewhere.
Exactly.
And he's flying through icing conditions and things, but he's going to get it there.
Absolutely.
Well, those things don't make TV stories.
No, they don't. It's just it makes TV stories when the part doesn't get there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. 1,000 workers out of work today because some damn pilot didn't want to fly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it. And props to that pilot if they made a good decision to not do it, you know. But, you know, unfortunately.
But they're that important.
They are that important. Here, can I, let's bring this back to the cargo element and how important it is. There is I read an article a while ago, and I forgot what source it was, and I'll have to search it and see if I can put it on simpleflight.net. But there was the University of Illinois, where I went to school, was shutting down its aviation program. And I'm absolutely kicking myself for not doing this and writing a letter, you know, to the board of directors of the university and doing this. But I wanted to make them know or let them understand the economic value that the university created by just educating a small handful of pilots. You know, what that actually meant to the economy. So there was the article that I read talked about a UPS 747. And if a UPS 747 doesn't fly because the pilot called in sick or something like that, the complete crew is not there, you could actually see a little blip on the gross national product.
Yeah.
And that's how much of an economic force each one of these airplanes has, and a pilot has that responsibility of delivering.
Well, I think that's a key thing that people need to be made aware of. In Virginia, they're doing a very good job of this. If you drive around the state of Virginia and you go near an airport, near a town,
right,
there's a sign that states what the economic impact of that airport is
nice.
On the immediate area and the state. In other words,
that.
How much the economy is boosted by the traffic at that airport.
That's actually a really great idea.
Keeps it from being turned into a residential area.
Absolutely.
Oh, tax base. Yeah, right. But taxes are money taken from people. Economic boost, that's money given to people.
Exactly. It's generated rather than, you know, consumed, which is it's kind of a twisted thinking. But so there's an enthusiasm. And here's another piece of enthusiasm. So this idea of the economic power a pilot would have of understanding the responsibility that you have to, as a UPS pilot or a FedEx pilot, that you have is, you know, you're in charge of all this freight. And if that freight doesn't get there, you know, Wall Street is going to falter.
Okay, so the teachers in Chicago are responsible for educating all these students.
Yes.
And they take a strike.
Yes.
Well, what happens if the pilots go on strike?
That's
it's against the law.
It is against the law. The government won't let it happen because it's that much of an economic force.
And it hits immediately.
And it with immediate effect. Exactly. The FedEx can't live up to its, we'll get it there the next day.
Are the hockey players going on strike?
We had a NBA basketball strike
mm-hmm.
this year, and that was, you know, okay, maybe some people's Friday night plans were derailed, but, you know, I'm sure the owners didn't really like it, and the NBA didn't like it, but, you know, was it that big of a deal?
Didn't seem to hit the GNP that hard.
No, Wall Street didn't falter because of it. Maybe it did a little bit, but, you know, nothing that... who knows? But it was a, you know, if you lose if a 747 doesn't go, that's full of precious cargo. Yeah, you're gonna see some serious faltering, and that's kind of. And me being a professional pilot, I really take ownership of that responsibility, and that's kind of gives me some of the enthusiasm. You know, right now being a corporate pilot, you know, I fly around executives.
Whoa. You Whoa. Take executives to Washington to ask for tax relief.
No, I sure don't. No.
That's the first thought many people have when you say you're a corporate pilot.
Exactly. That's unfortunate because the way that the people that I fly for, they do a phenomenal job of making aviation one of the best, you know, best business models that you could possibly put on paper and execute. You know, it's such an essential tool for them that there's no discussion whatsoever of ever getting rid of it. So taking that of the executive's stance on aviation, which I'm part of that, right, just mm-hmm. because I fly the plane around, by taking that stance and knowing the responsibility that I have and my coworkers have, is pretty amazing. We're flying around, you know, a multi-billion-dollar company's intellectual property, and to execute and keep the economy going. And it's such a boost. And you know, if something was unsafe, it's whose job is it to speak up? It's mine. You know, as a 27-year-old, it's unbelievable. It's really cool.
You're 27 years old.
Yeah, can you believe it? I'm this many.
Sometimes, yeah, I'm this many. All right.
So
you know what we need to do here?
What's that?
This is Simple Flight Radio on Ethanolive Internet Radio, ethanolive.com.
Exactly. And if for those listeners out there, if you have any ideas on aviation enthusiasm, we'd love to hear from you. You can call us live and be on the show live with us. You can dial us in at 312-436-0356, or you can tweet us or send us a Facebook message. Just go to simpleflight.net, our radio page. You'll find all of our social media outlets there, as well as if you go to ethanolive.com, you can use the interactive chat function that
you
we're
know,
monitoring.
I've heard some talk about how come you don't have an 800 number. Well, by golly, everybody's using cell phones, and it's after 7 o'clock. So.
Yeah, exactly. There's a strategic reason why we have this show at 8 p.m.
It's also a weekend. So
exactly. Free nights and weekends, so dial in. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're listening to the podcast, or if you've downloaded this on the archives of SimpleNet Radio, don't call in.
No, please do not. We'll get a busy
season. The call-ins only work when we're live.
Live on the radio.
Yeah, and that would be at, what are we now?
Right
we're
now?
At 0200
Zulu. 0200 Zulu, 2103 military time, or 9 p.m. Almost in time for the 10 o'clock news. But we don't like the 10 o'clock news because the 9 o'clock news is all about aviation and enthusiasm.
There we go.
Absolutely. So I think these are some pretty interesting points that we're bringing up of, okay, where does this exist now? Let's bring it back to this military might and power.
Yeah. I love the sights of an A-10 Warthog going through the sky with its cannons blasting.
It's the prettiest, ugliest plane in the air. I love it.
Yeah.
It's that cannon is very powerful. The sound of the engines is the sound of freedom and all that, and it's very it's wonderful, you know. And people, I think, really like this. Really like seeing this demonstration of air power. I mean, take the Chicago Air and Water Show. Okay, a million people show up to go see this. You know, and more. It's a social event, but definitely it's changed. Right? It's not necessarily it is a show off, but
oh, it used to be very heavily a military show off, and
exactly.
We've watched in the last 10 years as air shows have picked up a tremendous amount of civilian content.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sean Tucker,
right?
Melissa Pemberton,
exactly. Oh, who's that? Sluicy Davis or something like that? He's a guy that flies a biplane.
You're thinking of the woman and her husband. She's the wing walker.
Oh, Dacey, the Daceys.
That may be who it is. I'm at a loss.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. So this military power idea has shifted. And now anytime we hear about military aviation.
What a waste of money.
What a waste of money, or who did it kill? And, you know, how you know, let's get the victim side of the story. So that's a hurdle. There's this negative connection with this. And that's a huge hurdle now. And so if I were a 19-year-old, if I were Mr. McGee's shoes, and I was trying to become a pilot, there's a lot of hurdles that I've got to overcome.
Oh, I'd be a big fan of Richard Branson.
Oh, yeah.
He's surrounded himself with... I mean, you know, here I am with a microphone in front of me trying to think, you know, I could be Howard Stern, but you didn't provide me with the right props. Now, Richard Branson has got the right props in his life.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he's had the record label, airline, space venture now. So
he has a couple airlines, records, phone.
Yeah, but the big thing right now is the space exploration, and then you've got SpaceX that's actually going out there and doing NASA's job for them. Nice. From a civilian business standpoint.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, the old adage, if we put the U.S. government in charge of the sand inventory in the Sahara, it would be an oasis in no time. But we've taken the government and taken them out of control of a lot of the space program.
Right.
I can't remember the guy's name who's the CEO for SpaceX who made his money in internet business and decided, this is where I want to be. This is where my enthusiasm is.
Right.
And SpaceX now is getting in a position to be the contract supplier to the space station.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. That's pretty neat. And, you know, and I think that's kind of, I'm okay with that shift.
Yeah, but it takes a certain kind of person that wants to walk out onto a concrete pad and say, I love the smell of hydrazine in the morning. Yeah. There's a certain pungent odor to the peroxide fuels that you just don't get sniffing 100 low lead.
Exactly. Well, I think that, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of enthusiasm. So that's a very unknown, you know, a very unknown area. Well, we've sent space
That's
shuttles.
Going beyond.
That is going beyond.
We don't know today how to do some of these things. It's still being determined. And the people that are doing the determination, a lot of times, are people working at computers with design software or doing fluid analytics. Or they're the people that are trying to figure out how do you do all of the accounting for this.
Right.
You can be a bean counter and be into this field and be very important because projects need management. These things go on and on and on. The Mars project, I mean, how long was that? 9 months since from takeoff until it landed and all of the excitement went on?
Right.
And you had to just let it do it on autopilot for 7 minutes?
Yeah, right.
Imagine letting ILS take over your landing approach for 7 minutes.
Wow.
How would you feel about it?
In a way, I would feel, whoa, I gotta watch this thing, but pretty excited, too, that this is a cool piece of technology.
It takes a new attitude.
Absolutely.
And I'm not sure that the older people really have that attitude. And the problem is I'm not sure the younger people have the enthusiasm.
Right. Well, I think that the enthusiasm is being delivered. Well, it's. I don't even know if it is being delivered by the older people, you know, in aviation. You know,
it's being criticized by the older people.
It is being criticized. So let's take this idea of going into the unknown real quick. This weekend, I had a great weekend. I flew with my coworker and the other co-founder of Simple Flight, Travis Ammon, and we took.
This is what you did as soon as you got rid of me.
Yeah, exactly.
After our flight.
You're right, exactly.
You got up the next day, and this is what you did.
Yeah, they got up and hopped in a Piper Dakota, brand new for the flying club that we belong to. This is one of the new airplanes and additions to our flying club. And we took two eager pilots that wanted to learn. We're very excited. And we had organized this trip we took this trip and we flew to Gaston's Resort in Lakeview, Arkansas, off the Bull Shoals River in the Ozarks. And what the real neat thing is that we're flying. This trip was supposed. It was designed to take pilots, recreational pilots, and not with a recreational rating, but you know, people that just like to fly for fun. And give them experiences that they'd never do otherwise, such as taking them into the unknown. So here's something that happens with this. And we took on the first leg from Chicago to St. Louis. We flew VFR into a Class B airport, St. Louis Lambert.
All right,
yeah. So think what. With that, have you ever done that?
Oh, yes.
Sure.
And here I am, a student pilot.
Yeah.
But, yes, I was at the controls, and my flight instructor, this guy that some of you out there may know, Al Waterloo, had a little surprise for me. You know, this is the thing. enthusiasm, you've got to build excitement into it. And
right.
if you want excitement in your life and you want to find it in aviation, tell the person that you're flying with. Tell everybody you know around you that you want to make it happen. Because on the 4th of July of this year,
yeah.
my flight instructor said, well, you know, as a student pilot, even after you solo, you can't take any passengers with you.
Right.
But there isn't anything that says that we can't have somebody sitting in the back seat while you take a lesson.
Absolutely.
So, on the 4th of July, my wife was a passenger in the back seat as my lesson included some night flying, watching
yes.
the fireworks around the northern suburbs of Chicago. And to finish it all off, my flight instructor said, we have a little surprise in store now. Let's find out if this is going to work.
Right.
And he calls Chicago Approach, and he says, this is Archer 3096 Bravo. I got a question for you. And they said, 96 Bravo, what's your question? He says, wondering if we could shoot touch and go at O'Hare tonight. And they said, oh, that sounds interesting. Let's see if we can work that out.
Yeah.
We'll get back to you. 96 Bravo. In the meantime, vector yourself over to the lakeshore, and we'll get back to you.
That's wonderful.
And that's how it started. But, yes, Class B, that's a hoot.
That is a hoot.
And you got to learn sometime really what it's like. It's not – you don't avoid. Understand what it is that you're avoiding.
Right.
They did move heaven and earth for us at 10 o'clock at night when there was no traffic around. They diverted everybody away from one runway to let a Piper Archer land
yeah.
with a landing speed of about 70 knots.
Absolutely.
fireworks going off all over the place, but everybody was having a party, and they let us have our own little party at their party palace.
Absolutely. Well,
St. Louis, the same thing, huh?
St. Louis was
fireworks?
The same thing. No fireworks, actually a hot air balloon festival.
All right.
So, kind of, and those things are just as colorful as fireworks. Well, before we go into that, I want to play this one little audio clip, and just of us going into...
Archer 3096 Bravo is with you for 27 left.
Archer 3096 Bravo, O'Hare Tower, proceeding to class Bravo airspace as requested. You're number 1 for 27 left. And I'll give you a landing clearance or touch and go clearance when you're in about a 4 mile final. Traffic will be lining up and landing on my 28.
All right, we'll continue in for 27 left and clear to Bravo 9.
Yeah. There it was. How about it?
I remember that.
Yeah.
ATC Live. Folks, when you do something, go back and capture it.
Yeah, go get it. So that was, but yeah, so anyway, we took these guys. So that's kind of the same thing we heard going into St. Louis. These two pilots, I think they had a couple hundred hours each, and they were eager to learn. And, you know, the second leg of this trip, down to Gaston's, we were going to fly into a grass strip along a river valley in the mountains of the Ozarks.
So you're doing two tails of the extremes here.
Two tails of the extreme, massive airport, Bravo, you know, Class B airspace, and then mountain flying in a grass airplane with a loaded airplane. You know, two unknowns, right, for somebody that has a couple hundred hours. But the weather, unfortunately, Mother Nature, gave us another unknown, and that was some weather that we had to deal with.
You didn't put pontoons on in time?
We didn't put pontoons on in time, but we did have our weather rate uplink on our GPS. Uploaded in time, and we saw that there's IFR condition, low IFR conditions all over the Ozark Valley or region that we were flying into, and it was just another good learning opportunity because we were taking these guys to an extreme that they would never otherwise. You know, it's illegal for them to go into this, but they want to understand it and see it. So here we are. We fly into the local airport closest to Gaston's, and we land after shooting a full ILS via the procedure turn all the way down to minimums and breaking out just before we have to call missed.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was kind of fun.
So how many people have signed up for IFR lessons now?
Hopefully two.
It's worth pointing out that our club is not a huge club.
No.
We have about 80 to 90 members.
Yes.
Who are always pursuing something to improve their knowledge of aviation.
Exactly.
They are some of the neatest people, if I can just, you know, pat ourselves on the back.
Yeah. I think it's not a large club, but it's a high-quality club. I think that's the best way to describe that, because there are so many great people, and we're all here to help each other, you know, and
even to help other clubs. If there's any, you know, somebody really gets sick and tired of us tooting our own horn, well, come take a look.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'd love to, you know, just rub elbows with you and find out, you know, What are you doing that works? Because, you know, we're not doing everything that we can.
No.
We're doing the things we can get around to like everybody else does.
Right.
And we could probably learn from somebody else, and we don't mind somebody looking over our shoulder.
Not at all. I mean, that's all part of aviation. It's just we're all trying to make each other better.
And just so happens that everybody on your show lately has been from the club. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're gonna, the neat thing is that's a great starting point, and then they know people, and so on and so forth.
And you're getting some other people lined up to be on future shows. So.
Exactly. I think it's going to be great. But
so, kids, keep tuning in. This is going to get interesting.
Absolutely. It's going to be an awesome ride. But so the people that I brought, or Travis and I brought along on this trip, one of them, one of these gentlemen belongs to Aviation Explorers, which is, I think, is a pretty noble organization that tries to generate enthusiasm in youth and expose them to aviation. And one of the things that kind of disturbed me this weekend is that he mentioned that this club tries to go out actively to schools, high schools and middle schools, and start aviation clubs, like an extracurricular activity. But the thing that really bothers me is the response that they've gotten. And the response hasn't been from the kids, because it's never gotten to the kids. And you
wow.
know how? You know why? It's because the school district and the advisors and the counselors that are trying to, you know, regulate or say yes, this is a good club or a bad club, they think aviation is worthless. They think that there's no career future in it. The money's bad. The reward is somewhere else. So why have an aviation club?
Wait a minute. What? I'm still trying to get my head around what you just said. They think it's useless.
Right.
Okay. So obviously they don't listen to your show.
Obviously not.
The other thing that I'm getting in my head here is that these are the people who want to please the parents.
Right.
And they're playing it safe.
Yeah, exactly. They're playing it safe because a lot of that is measured in it later on the road is probably measured in financial success. You know, you could probably get an accounting job or be an attorney and make way more money than being a pilot, but you know what I think pilots get a lot more reward than just money.
Look at who your student base is right now. It's turning out to be people that are up in years who
right.
have the time and money to get back into flying, and like me, they say, I've always wanted to fly.
Exactly.
I got exposed to it when I was a teenager. Then I had responsibilities and I had other things in the way, and I didn't get a chance to do it.
Exactly.
So how many students do you have that are over 50 right now?
100% of them.
I think that speaks volumes right there.
Right.
These are people that would have pursued it earlier if things had gone right.
Exactly.
But if the advisors at school and everything are saying, I don't want to be the person that's going to have to deal with a student's parents coming in and saying, you're telling him he should go flying?
Right. It costs us. It's going to cost us an arm and a leg. You know, what are you? Tell them to do. Take violin lessons or something.
Well, yeah, and so you watch The Good Wife on TV, and that's about attorneys and law,
right?
And you watch CSI, and that's about policemen. I guess it's okay to be a policeman,
right?
I mean, these are all things that we need. How many shows are there about the nitty gritty stuff where aviation really contributes? I think you listed them all right there.
Yeah. Well, I would say that there was one. It's no longer on the air.
Pan Am?
Flying Wild Alaska.
Oh, okay. Flying Wild Alaska.
Yeah,
okay, and you got Ice Pilots.
Ice Pilots.
Aviators.
And then I believe there's another one on National Geographic. But, I mean, they're so, I think Flying Wild Alaska was a good show.
I loved it.
Yeah, it was a great show.
Ariel Tweedo's a hoot. Jim Tweedo's not so bad either.
No. Anybody else? But, absolutely. And I think...
Got you again.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. I love it. But so the neat thing is I think that show did a really nice job of... out of all the current shows that are like that, Flying Wild Alaska did a great job of capturing, you know, how much, you know, Alaska depends on aviation.
Their communities won't exist without it.
Exactly. And it's pretty amazing. It's a very powerful thing. So when you're a pilot in that capacity, a village of 500 people, you know, is excited to see you come in and land to deliver a part or the fuel or deliver their first ATM machine.
So would you rather be a pilot in Alaska or an accountant in an accounting firm in Chicago?
Are you
kidding? Which one's going to turn you on more?
Definitely. Even though it's above the Arctic Circle, supporting villages and being a pilot in Alaska.
It gets down to some primal things.
Yeah.
Prove that you can do something.
Exactly.
Prove that you can stand in your shoes and leave tracks behind you when you walk.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And I think that there's it would be interesting to talk with some of these people, the pilots that are flying around up there, and actually hear their stories on, you know, what it's the tracks that they are leaving. You know, they're leaving tracks right now.
Actually, we've had a few of them here at the field that have worked in maintenance and things like that. They've spent time up there, and
sure,
then they come back here and they try civilization for a while.
Yeah.
And then they go back up to Alaska.
Exactly. They go back and they leave better tracks up there, which is, yeah, I think that's great, you know.
But seriously, though, the advisors in the schools,
yes,
need to be aware of what things actually can turn on the student to be somebody.
Exactly. Rather than showing them where the reward is. I like what we had a conversation about this earlier, and you know the reward is could be greater somewhere, but what is the reward? Maybe, you know, a lot of education is based on financial success,
paying off a student loan
or you know, working somewhere and having a high dollar paycheck. But I tell you what, being a co-pilot making $22,000 a year, my first year at the airline. The money part was, it got to you sometimes, but there's something else. There's something greater and deeper that was make me never think that this is not what I'm supposed to be doing.
There's two things that hit me as soon as you start talking about your life as an airline pilot, because I've known a few of them. One,
yeah,
is, yeah, there's this awesome thing of being given a plane to go fly and get paid for it.
Right.
So even if it is only $20,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is the negative part, is that they give you a schedule that's convenient to them.
Exactly.
You're pretty much, you don't get the respect that you think you should get.
Right.
And that comes from what we expect out of airlines.
Yeah, right.
That
absolutely
is, you get me from point A. Herb Kelleher put, he's the former, he's the CEO that made Southwest really what it is.
Yeah, did a great job at it.
When he retired, other people have done a good job with it because he built some good leaders to take his place. But he said that running an airline, your product is getting people from point A to point B safely and on time.
Yeah.
Everything else is negotiable. And he did that so very well, but he also respected who his clients were. Now you've got everybody's trying to do it for as cheap as they can to compete with Southwest, who had a fleet of nothing but 737s. Therefore, their maintenance inventory was unbelievably low, and they had parts everywhere their airplanes were so they could fix them.
Right.
Everybody trying to compete started getting regional planes, regional jets.
Yeah.
Doesn't carry as much payload.
Right.
And they tried to open up to get to airports that Southwest didn't get to.
Right.
Southwest got to them anyway.
They found
their way
in.
They couldn't compete.
No.
So today what we've got is a commodity called air travel.
Exactly.
Which is exactly where Trailways and Greyhound went.
Yeah, yeah, I think you hit that. You know, hit the nail on the head with that. Is that
put the wings on a Greyhound bus, and you've got a major airline.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely,
it's the same game. And you've got architects that build these awesome airports.
Yeah,
man, that's the big difference, because you never saw bus terminals like that.
No,
with malls.
No, malls, and you know what they're putting in there's one airport that really, really strikes me as it was a leader of being a mall, right? And that was the Pittsburgh airport.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh airport is a beautiful, I thought they had it a
this was after they had the pods, the idea of all of the pods out there, when they started having the central part for when you're not at the pod, what do you do?
Right, exactly. What do? You spend money, you go shopping and all that. I mean, heck, they had a Walgreens or a Rite Aid pharmacy in the middle of the terminal. I thought it was a brilliant idea. But so they had I thought the Pittsburgh airport did a great job of building enthusiasm to go fly, because you had
because everybody wanted to get away from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
No, think about it. Back then, Pittsburgh wasn't what it is today.
No, it's not.
Pittsburgh's an awesome place today.
It is. It is a great place.
And not just because of Three Rivers Stadium.
No. Or the Steelers or the Penguins. They deliver on championships. But they have. It is. I think Pittsburgh's a great place. And it's a very clean city and all that, but they did a great job of building this enthusiasm. They had airside and landside terminals. So you check in landside, take a tram that goes underground, and then you're boom. When you break out, you're on the airside, and now you're in this fabulous shopping mall, you know, area. And you can get something really good to eat. Go to the wine bar if you wanted and have a glass of good wine.
This isn't for the pilots.
No, it's not for the pilots, but the pilots get the little room in the basement. But still, I mean, from a consumer standpoint, it's phenomenal.
I think the city that just happens to be an airport maybe what airports turn into, because the cities are surrounding the airports.
Right. There's actually a really good book, and I have to look it up. But it was it was about urban planning. How you look at Chicago. Look at Chicago and how it came about. It's along a lake. It was a very big, you know, transportation hub.
Boats and trains.
And everything, the city was built around those ports. Look at New York. You know, same thing. The New York Harbor, you know, the city was built around that. The LaGuardia Airport was way out in the country back then. And now it's, you know, the city built itself kind of, you know, around that by, you know, because the land was valuable.
Right.
Now this book talks about is how that shifted. And now you end up, you go from building a city around a seaport to a airport, and kind of a neat thought.
And we have Midway that got city locked.
Yeah, that got city locked. And
we've got O'Hare that went through an expansion and decided that some of the suburbs need to be knocked down.
Yep, exactly.
So there's that constant battle that goes on, and they want to put in a third airport, even though they've got two or three third airports already.
Right.
You've got Rockford. You've got Waukegan.
You got Waukee,
you
DuPage,
got Kenosha, DuPage, Aurora.
Yeah,
there are some great airports here, but the politicians aren't making the money off of them the way they want. So they got to put one in Piatone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, who did you know that they had a groundbreaking ceremony?
Yes.
I thought it was funny because
it's going to be a private venture, as I understand it, and none of the airlines are showing any interest in it.
No. I don't think that they should. They're not in a position.
Now, you used to fly into Rantoul down there.
I did. We flew over top of it about 4 hours ago.
Oh, that's right. Just coming back from Arkansas.
Yeah. So that was that was actually a neat airport. They were, United Airlines was going to have a big maintenance hub there because they had these massive hangars to work on. From the Air Force. So
don't they have a good museum down there now?
They do. They have Illinois' largest aviation museum with some really neat airplanes that you won't find at many other aviation museums, like a Boeing B-58.
Oh, my gosh. The Hustler?
The Hustler.
They've got the Hustler?
They have the Hustler.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's like one of.
Hang on to that thought for just a second.
Sure.
I know this is your show, and I'm just a guest here, but I want to remind everybody, this is SimpleNet Radio on FN Alive Internet Radio, FNAlive.com.
All right. Well, thanks for the reminder.
I just had to do my Howard Stern thing.
Yeah.
Even without the props.
Absolutely. Thank you.
But you were getting into hangar talk.
Yeah, hangar talk.
I mean, a B-58 Hustler. One of the neatest things in my youth was that I lived on what was called an oil burner route.
An oil burner route?
You have no idea what an oil burner route is.
I have no idea what that is.
Back during the Cold War, when the B-58 was built, and the B-58 was what happens if you take all of the technology of, say, a B-47 and a B-52, and you combine it with all of the fighters that we've got that are too small to carry bombs.
Yeah.
You made a big fighter that could carry bombs.
Yeah.
And he can fly supersonic. Okay. Now, none of the bombers are flying supersonic.
No.
And some of the problems they got into with the B-58, and you and I hadn't even talked about this before the show. You're going like, where on earth are you going with this?
Yeah, the oil burner routes.
Well, the B-58 was one of the planes where they experimented with epoxy bonding of laminate structures for the wings. So
nice.
Its wings were literally held together with glue.
No kidding.
A supersonic bomber. They also had an exhaust trail that you could follow. You could walk on it. It was so full of carbon. Hence the oil burner routes. And there were parts of the country where they used something that was totally new then, and that was ground contour radar autopilot.
Really?
Really.
Contour autopilots.
And they would put these things on 200 feet above the ground and fly them at Mach 0.95.
Nice.
On bombing runs over residential areas.
Nice.
Out in the boonies, but it's still, people live there.
Yeah, right.
This is back in the day when you'd have F-102s and things like that breaking the sound barrier, flying over the countryside, and people were filing claims with the Air Force saying, my window's broke, and you're the only reason I can think of as to why.
Yeah.
And I can remember watching the curtains puff as our open windows because we didn't have central air conditioning, and as a jet flying overhead would come by at Mach 1 or close to it, and you could actually watch the drapes come about 2 inches off of the floor.
Oh,
as the wind would come in the window and just billow it out, and then it would go right back to where it was, and that whole thing lasted less than a second for it to lift it up and then for it to fall back down.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
But the oil burner routes were B-58s flying along like that on these super routes that the idea was, if we have to go invade Russia, this is the plane that's going to do it.
Yeah.
Because they took air-to-air refueling.
Right.
They carried bombs.
Uh-huh.
They were rated for nuclear.
Nice. Yeah.
Two pilots.
Two pilots. And these things were... I remember standing in Rantoul up. You get really close to one of these things, and holy cow, this thing was... It had a delta wing.
Yes.
It had a delta wing for supersonic flight, and it's a massive airplane.
It's not small. It looks, when you just look at a picture of one, it looks small.
When I look at it, I think Cold War.
Cold War?
Cold War.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I think that was definitely it's pretty amazing, you know, that airplane and, you know, Boeing.
So they've got one of those at Rantoul.
They do.
So if a bunch of us wanted to go see a good museum, that's one of the planes there. What else they have?
They have a Constellation, a Lockheed Constellation.
A Super Connie?
A Super Connie used for three military.
Tails. Okay, so they were used for reconnaissance. They flew around the Arctic Circle testing the Russian defenses a lot.
Yes, flying those. It has a radar dish like you would see.
Oh, this is the AWACS thing.
The AWACS, the primitive AWACS.
Uh-huh, with a rotating dish.
With a rotating dish, but it has like a hump that it had like an internal radar dish in it.
Okay.
Beacon in it, and it's actually a really cool airplane. I think they're really proud of that air, as they should be.
Wow, we've got to go down there.
Yeah,
how close can you land?
You can land right there and park and hop.
So
hop
we could take an outing from here, go down, see the museum, and come back.
We sure can. I'm thinking like another cross country or something.
I think that's something we need to work in.
Yeah,
and there, folks, is a reason for general aviation.
Yeah, absolutely.
We couldn't do that flying into Wright Pat.
We could not.
They have a great museum.
It's phenomenal. It's free.
That's
well, it's
right.
Not free because we all pay for it in our taxes. Therefore,
that's right.
They let us in. But no, you could definitely could do that at Rantoul. It's from Chicago. It's even if you're in a Piper Warrior or 172, it's only an hour flight down there, an hour flight back to Chicago. And it's such a great little tour. I mean, they have a lot of things in there, a lot of military history. This is an old, like, missile silo hangar this thing is in. Military-grade.
Hardened hangar?
Hardened hangar. And
where they put four jets in there just to keep them from having any flak from any nearby bombing or anything?
Yes. That's
okay.
Exactly it. And then they have right the town directly south of Rantoul is Urbana.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what Urbana has in aviation significance?
It's close to Champaign?
Close to Champaign, but there's a big aviation company that came out of Urbana.
Cessna?
No, close. It is Frasca Simulators. Have you ever heard of Frasca Simulators?
Yes.
So Frasca Simulators, I mean, the Frascas have been around. If you trained in a simulator.
Actually, though, keep in mind, I was interested in aviation as a kid and then now. So it went from Link to nothing to Redbird.
Yeah, Redbird. So here's, if you were to train in a simulator about 5 years ago or later than that, it would have been a Frasca. Frasca still builds simulators. They're phenomenal pieces of equipment. They take real parts from the airplane and put them in there and you interact with them and you can have a... Do a lot of.
I just never thought of Urbana as having aviation significance, but Champaign, I think of as having aviation significance.
Champaign has its own aviation significance with the University of Illinois there.
And what's the biggest part that you can think of besides the fact that you actually went to school there?
Well, that is the biggest thing. No, just kidding.
Didn't people at Champaign make MiGs the most popular place to take off and land?
They sure did with Microsoft Flight Simulator.
There we go.
Yeah.
Big hats off to them.
You better believe it. It was a great. So that's the funny part is that you have the Microsoft and Frasca. They were all kind of connected.
It's the same technology.
Same technology, and then they bring you boot up your old flight simulator program. Where do you take off from?
The default MiGs. was MiGs, a place that no longer exists.
Oh,
it's now Northerly Island.
Ugh. We won't even go there because that will bring
you can't go there. Well, you can if you're paying for a concert.
Yeah. Or you can walk around it, too. It's unbelievable. But the neat thing is that, here's another piece of aviation significance that you may not know. So the University of Illinois there, They have their Institute of Aviation, and this is another thing that
they do.
Yes,
they still do.
They do. They still do for another year or two, and then.
Then they're going with Blue Ash?
They go with Blue Ash. Blue Ash Airport in Cincinnati. Another sad story. But I think that they need to realize that, you know, so part of the reason why the Institute of Aviation is being shut down and closed is because the university thought it was kind of a blue-collar discipline. Can you believe that?
The Institute of Aviation... A blue-collar discipline.
Right. Versus, when you look at University of Illinois, you think engineering.
And, oh, yes, good engineering.
Great engineering and business. You know, very white, you know, what would be perceived as white-collar disciplines. And here's aviation being a pilot. You know, it's blue-collar.
They'd rather let a tech school take that over.
Yeah, a trade school or something like
yes.
that. Yes. Yeah, so they... But... It didn't fit into their model of inventing and developing. You know, this is aviation. We're training pilots. We're a pilot factory, which they were not. They did a really great job. But you know what's the neat thing is that the Institute of Aviation was very much in line with of new technologies coming out of the engineering school, the new business people coming out of the business school. The Institute of Aviation developed and invented Part 141 flight training. They were certificate number one.
You mean they're the ones that made that book that I carry around so much thicker?
Yes, they sure did. They came up with this new way of training and learning in aviation, and it was it's unfortunate that that's being shut down, but that's a very important part about aviation history. Is a lot of training schools are like that nowadays.
Oh, I thought I had my 2013 FAR AIM book out. I was going to figure out just how many pages that was.
Yeah,
I don't have it with me.
Oh well, that's all right. But yeah, so they added that whole and a whole other section to the FAR AIM. That's very University of Illinois like.
Yes. It is, but I share the sadness of losing the Institute of Aviation. I think part of that, though, is I just hate to see anybody denigrating the aviation educational thing.
Right.
But there's a lot more to it than that. There's
Very
the
much
management
so.
Of aviation. There, you know, it's an integrated program. It's not just one thing.
Right.
You can say that the Institute of Aviation just trained pilots.
Yeah,
but it did more than that.
No,
it did it.
It did.
Did right. it in a context of the business training.
It's a business training, a maintenance training, an educational training, or psychology training as well. There's this big thing called. And here's another
psychology. You need psychologists for pilots.
Believe it or not, you do. Believe it or not. And part of it is that there's one of the aviation professors down there invented a discipline within the psychology field called aviation or human factors. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes.
Being an engineer, I think that you would.
Starting with biometrics and...
Biometrics and all that. So this discipline talks about interaction of people and people,
the human interface.
The human interface when operating a piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So you driving your car, you flying an airplane, you working the EKG machine,
mm-hmm.
things like
yes.
that. Doctors doing a CAT scan. That you're operating machines. So that and there's a lot of accidents that have. Been exposed as major human factors problems, and a guy down at University of Illinois kind of invented this whole discipline, and it's now been wrapped up in the psychology department.
I've actually had the opportunity to work with engineers from the University of Illinois who majored in that area.
Yeah,
and they are indeed impressive.
Yeah,
in my education, I was they were just inventing books, and
did they even have slide rules back then?
Oh my gosh! I've still got some of the best slide rules. You know, the batteries never run down on those things. But getting into some of the biological engineering aspects of human interface, man and machine, with such things as powered nail guns and things to minimize the risk of what happens to your hand for the recoil.
Right.
How do you hold the instrument so that the weight balance doesn't fatigue you after you've used it for a day? Those guys from Champaign, they know what they're talking about in that area. So that's the importance of you know, taking the point on technology like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's a, well, I'm glad you think that they're bright because I have the human factors degree.
You know, let me rethink that. We were talking about the planes in the hangars a little while ago.
We sure were.
We got in, started out with a B-58. Can we get down to the other end of the spectrum?
We can.
Can we talk about the Sky Arrow?
Yes.
Most people listening probably don't even know what a Sky Arrow is.
They probably don't.
It's an old kit LSA.
Yes.
At least that's how it started out.
Right.
But you know where there's a Part 23 fully certified.
I do. A fully certified airplane in Hangar 5 at the Palwaukee or Chicago Executive Airport.
Yeah, there we go. Patting ourselves on the back again. Our flying club's got one in the rental program, folks. It's a pusher prop, 100 horsepower, and gets you up to about 100 knots and sips about 5 gallons of gas an hour.
That thing must have gone on like a thirst diet or something like that.
I don't know how, because it's got a rate of climb of something like 800 feet per second, feet per minute. No, not feet per second. Feet per
second. Talk about air might at that point.
That's right.
Yeah. No, that thing. I'm pretty excited. I saw that at the hangar today. Did you see it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that was.
It was out when I went through. It was out flying.
And
I think it's going to be out a lot because it's just, it's one of those things, you know, some days you want to put on your dress shoes and tighten the laces and tie the knot. Other days you just want to put on a slipper and just go out and walk comfortably.
Yeah.
I think that's where the Sky Arrow is going to come into our rental program.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. You know what they call that?
Good time.
Good time. Yes. Yes, they do. Or they call it drilling holes or boring holes in the sky.
Oh, that one will do it.
Yeah.
For a little bitty thing like that. Bob Marks just sent out a letter to everybody in the club. He's the one who flew it in from its previous owner.
And yeah.
He said the biggest complaint he had about it was that you need to wear a hat unless you're working on your suntan. It's all canopy.
That's beautiful.
All the visibility of a helicopter.
Oh man, I'm kind of like my mouth is watering to fly this thing.
Well, you put a put the engine behind you and above the wing. And,
yeah.
He was comparing it to the Lake Amphibian.
Yeah.
And it looks like that.
It does. I've got a picture that I'm going to post on Twitter right now. Well, it's actually a link to one, so you can get a good idea of what it looks like. And if you want to find it, go to Twitter, and you can follow us. If you don't know how to follow us or what our Twitter handle is, go to simpleflight.net and look up on our radio page, and you'll see all of our social media outlets. You'll see this hashtagged under Simple Flight.
You know what I like about that plane, though, is that it's fast enough to stay in the mix of the airplanes. Excuse me, in the mix of the airplanes that are flying around here, it's not a J3,
right?
It's not. So it can keep up with that. It's got a low flying cost,
very low,
and it's got all of the facility that you'd like to have. Fairly slow landing speed.
Right.
It's got flaps, so it can conform.
Right.
And it's got zip. It's got pep. So
it does. You know what it also has? It has a glass
waiting
panel.
List? Oh, a glass panel?
Can you believe that?
No. Well, what kind is... I haven't really taken a look at the panel on the thing. So what's it got, like the Dynon type of
I think
gear?
It has some Garmin 500... capability, so kind of like a baby G1000. It has some standby instruments. It is a
slick
little thing. Yeah, it is really nice.
Bob had made a comment that it didn't have VOR.
Because it has a beautiful GPS system.
Yeah, but if you're wanting to go out and work on your navigation stuff.
Yeah.
So this would be more for just getting in it and going and watching the countryside and going from point A to point B, because that's what your GPS is good for.
Right, absolutely. Or it has that big of, it has big enough a window to just to pull out your map and figure out where, how to go from there.
Does it have a big enough cockpit to pull out a map? It's tandem.
No, it is tandem.
That gets to be a problem.
It does, but I wouldn't say.
But
it's
then you were talking about your Google Nexus being the perfect.
Yes, I love this thing. I use this. So the gentleman who mentioned this thing about the aviation explorers and how they've reached out to the different high schools and middle schools about aviation clubs. I think this could be a great way to build enthusiasm of, you know, talk about a
sure.
neato.
Here's a new use for your electronic toys.
Yeah, exactly. You know, use them to fly with in around in aviation.
Well, that it dawned on me that Nexus 7 that you've got, it's an Android version of a smaller iPad, and I can't wait to see when Apple comes out with their 7-inch comparison.
Yeah.
The world will change then, because there are some shortcomings that the Nexus has, but it is first on the market, and it is great. But it's also got inertia and magnetic bearing and GPS and all of this stuff. So it seems to me that you've got the Garmin Pilot working on yours, which is pretty full-featured.
It is.
Do you also have a flight simulator on it? I mean, it's got the inertial stuff in it. You could just use that as your yoke, and if you're not actually flying, it could be your game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think there is, I do have one on the iPad, a little RC airplane game. That's pretty nice. And I need to check that out. I'll see if there's any games with aviation.
I'm coming at this with a particular point. You know, we've got the toys.
Yes.
What if you make the toy as just the introduction to the real thing?
Ooh. That's how I kind of got into aviation. Flight simulator.
Of
Microsoft.
It's a great introduction, but what if that same computer that you learned flight simulator on actually mounted in the airplane?
Oh, man, that would have been awesome.
What if the transition was that easy?
It would have been great. I think that's a very James Bond moment.
No, that's where it's going.
Yeah, no, I think it's wonderful.
I think it's part of the efficiency of electronics. I think it's part of the innovative mind. If we want to get enthusiasm going, I'd like to see some 10th grader out there who's learning how to program code come up with a way to do that. He's going to have to learn to fly to make it work right.
Yeah, I would love it.
I don't know too many 70-year-old people who are trying to learn code that know how to fly that are going to be able to fit that into a tablet.
Yeah, right. Well, I hope that I could help teach that guy how to fly.
How long has it been since you had a student under 30?
Oh, well, I've given some rides and checkouts and all that, but it's been a little while to have like a student working on their rating and all. So there's a, but you know. So hopefully, I do. Yeah, you know, I think that there's a lot of value in having some younger students, and I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah, the transition of what's happening. I've learned that a lot of times I can't change it.
Right.
I can try to be on the winning side and feel good about the outcome.
Yeah.
That's what I want to do.
Right.
So I'd like to see a winning side for aviation. And I know there's going to be one. It might be on the cutting edge between the atmosphere and the non-atmosphere.
Yes.
There's no edge there. It's kind of a long transition.
Yeah.
It might be done by people that play with electronics rather than airplanes.
Yeah.
The pilot might be sitting in an air-conditioned room.
Very true.
Might be a team of 20 people working together with 100 computers.
That sounds like fun.
But the topic is still going to be, how do we get this thing through the atmosphere and maybe beyond? And how do we accomplish our goal, and how do we get it back? And that's where aviation is going to be. In the meantime, I think there's also going to be that fringe world of general aviation where people fly for the fun of it.
And they should, because it's a ton of fun.
I think I'm going to do it as long as my body lets me, and it gets me into the, one of the FAA safety things that's coming around. It's going to be up in Milwaukee, and then over here on Milwaukee Avenue in Wheeling, the safety seminar on, I forget the exact title of it, but Flying for Life or something like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So, oh, that's exciting. Good for you. So there's a whole bunch of enthusiasm in that, and I think there's a whole life thing. It's a, I'm really glad that you brought that poem to the show tonight.
Me too. Who sponsors this show? Who's the staff that works on this stuff here?
Well, we have tonight's legal counsel was brought to you know who this guy is? This guy is actually a pretty cool guy. He's
Charlie Waite.
Charlie Waite.
Mm-hmm.
Of Line Up and Wait.
Yep.
LLP.
Yep. When you need to deal with a lot of paperwork, Line Up and Wait.
Line Up and Wait.
There we go.
Our tonight's maintenance has been provided by Cost a Lot.
Cost a Lot. Ugh. Yes.
Yes. Our travel arrangements were brought to us by Mr. Heathrow.
Yes.
Mr. LAX. Mr. LAX is out of town.
Yeah.
music tonight has been brought to us by Carbeat.
Carbeat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We had a little icing this week, too, when we were flying.
We sure did. That was kind of fun. We didn't know. We're going into that unknown. Flip the Carbeat on. And music by Carbeat. Pilots are kind of messy. I mean, if look at our table here. So therefore, housekeeping is very much necessity. Housekeeping is provided by Maginito.
Maginito.
Yes.
There were two of them, weren't there?
There were. Twins. Maggie and Margaret. Well, and we all know that pilots love to eat, and then that's a fact with my Jimmy John's cup and bag of popcorn here, and that was brought to us. The person that brought that in,
Ms. Lott.
Yes,
Etta Lott.
Etta Lott.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's wonderful, and she's assisted by Imelda DeFudge.
Imelda DeFudge.
Imelda DeFudge.
Yeah, Imelda.
Yeah, that must be Czechoslovakian.
Imelda? No, that's Spanish, I think.
Spanish.
Imelda DeFudge.
Imelda DeFudge.
Yeah.
we have, our airplanes that are meticulously maintained by, Otto's brother, who we mentioned, Cost a Lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that cost is it costs us a lot of money. We might not always have it, so therefore we have to get financing. And financing for this Simple Flight Radio show has been provided by Betty Makes It.
Mm-hmm. You better.
You bet. Yeah, exactly. He's got some notes out there. Anyway, our chief scheduler for bringing guests like yourself on the show is Mr. Clarence Good. And then all facts used on the show have been researched by Wanda Fitzrue.
Wonder if it's true.
Wonder if it's true.
Jim Back's wife is doing some work for you, too. I don't know if you're familiar with all of the work that she's doing researching all of the warbird information. So if you want to know anything, her name's Helen.
So if you want to
know anything about warbirds, when they were made, how many were made, and things like that, you got to go to Helen Back. Okay.
You sure do.
I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have not dreamed of. wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Up, up the long, delirious, burning blue. I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace, where never lark or even eagle flew. And while with silent lifting mind I've trod the high untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God.
Wow.
John Gillespie McGee, Jr., born June 9, 1922, died 11 December 1941, just a few months after he wrote that at the age of 19.
Well, I'm glad he got that poem out, and that's a that makes me want to go out and fly and take a craft higher than any lark or eagle. That's wonderful.
Yep.
But anyway,
that's enthusiasm.
That is enthusiasm. Amen. But anyway, that was a great. I think we set a great platform to find some people doing amazing things in aviation, bringing the enthusiasm back into aviation, reaching out to all ages, and we're excited to go out and explore that and have people that are doing that right now today in aviation on the show. So anyway, thank you, Jim, for coming on the show tonight. It's been wonderful.
Thank you, Al. I was glad to be here.
Yeah, well, is that Helen Beck's sister-in-law?
No, I've just been around the helium tanks. I'm trying to get my balloon up.
Yeah, well, good luck with that, and we'll hopefully, I'm sure you'll be back on the show.
I wouldn't be too sure about that.
Yeah, well, if you keep drinking or if you keep inhaling helium like that, we might have to call 911. I don't know if we can resuscitate that, but
helium's kind of rare right now. Yeah. It's hard to find.
Yeah. Anyway. Good night, everybody. Hopefully you don't stay in the helium tanks like Mr. Stone. And if you do, we'd love to hear the enthusiasm behind it.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
This is Ethanolive Internet Radio, www.ethanolive.com.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.